What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. With me as all is the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. Justin, what's going on, man? We're recording remote today.
I know, yeah, a little change it up, a little change of pace. Another gray Monday in Boston, though. That stayed the same. And for the first time in a while, we actually have some interesting Patriots news, I guess, to talk about, right?
Well, it's a victory Monday for the first time in a few weeks, which is good.
For sure. Well, I mean, I guess it depends on how you're looking at it, right?
It depends on how you look at it. That is absolutely spot on. Well, let's get right to it, Justin. We have a great episode lined up for you. We're going to break things down a little differently today than we've done in the past, change the format up a little bit. We're going to start now recording two separate podcasts. One where we talk about the Patriots and one where we talk about around the league. And that's just because we kind of felt like our around the league might be getting buried at the end. And we wanted people to be able to easily access and listen to both. So this week, from going forward now, you're going to see two separate editions of the podcast released, the Patriots podcast and then Around the League podcast. And that's going to start with today. And Justin, let's get right to it with the kickoff. That is the opening take that begins and sets the table for the rest of the podcast. Let's start with this, Justin. We're going to get into the whole everything from a surprising win on Thursday night. We're going to get into the Mac and Zappy thing and what that means for this franchise and where the franchise is headed. But I want to start with this, and that is the Christmas miracle will not be happening this year. Even though they won on Thursday night, the Patriots were officially eliminated from playoff contention over the weekend based on the results of some of the other games around the league. And, you know, for those of us that were holding out hope that the miracle would happen, now we have to give up that hope. It's not happening this year. The Patriots now have missed the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years, and they will be under 500 for 3 of the last 4 years. So before we even get into some of what happened last week in Pittsburgh, let's just say, Justin, that the Patriots right now are a franchise that obviously isn't headed in the right or doesn't really have a direction. I wouldn't even say headed in the wrong direction. They don't even have a direction right now. This, Justin, what you see from this franchise the last 3 or 4 years, this is what happens when teams draft quarterback in the first round and that quarterback ends up sucking, which is what happened here with Mac Jones. For whatever the reason is, whatever the breakdown of responsible Belichick, Kraft, Patricia, Judge, whatever you want to point the finger, this is what happens when you make that investment in a first-round quarterback and he doesn't develop, he regresses, he sucks. We, as Patriots fans, we've been sitting back and laughing at other franchises for the last 30 years. And we've been watching the Jets and the Bears and the Jaguars and the Cardinals and the Redskins. I mean, go down the list of teams that draft these guys. And then you're committed. You're committed to making a 3-4 year investment in them. And if it doesn't work out, it's back to the drawing board. And that's exactly what happened here.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened here. And look, we've talked about, like, before we got ourselves into this position, or even like when we first drafted Mac and we were speculating, you know, what the future was going to hold, what was going to become of Mac Jones. You know, we had talked and we had looked around the league and we had specifically picked out some franchises that this has become more than just a trap for them. It's become like the norm in what it can do to a franchise over years or even decades. We talked about teams like the Cleveland Browns, teams like the New York Jets, right? Like teams that just could never get that position right, wasted so much first round draft capital. And at the end of the day, they never found their guy. And all it did was prevent them from adding top tier talent in building an actual good roster top to bottom, because they were always in search of that first piece, which was the franchise quarterback. This Patriots team is anything but, I think, predictable now. And I say that because like I look at this team and I'm like, okay, yes, you thought that like they were bottom of the tier, like for the league, and you know, they're gonna lose the rest of their games, and then you know, they're gonna have trouble competing. But it's like I look at this and I'm like, I have no clue what to expect for the rest of the year with Bailey Zappe starting. I mean, you have arguably a top five defense as is, even with their injuries right now. You have a team who really has nothing to lose right now. So like, I have no clue what to expect from this Patriots team the rest of the year. But one thing is for certain, like you said, they have seemed to fallen into that hole of not being able to find that next quarterback. And you hope that we can nip that in the bud before it becomes a reoccurring Jets or Browns type of situation. Well,
it's been 4 years, which is a long time, you know, and you know, the thing is, like, you look across this franchise, what's happening now? The coach, he's probably going to be not back next year. I mean, we don't know for sure, but, you know, that's something that's being discussed. You know, the seats are empty at the stadium more than they've been in a long time. There's distension in the locker room. They're losing chronically and consistently. Like, all of these things are the hallmark traits of a blown first round pick on a quarterback. It's been happening to other franchises for years, and now it's just happened to the Patriots.
For sure. Well, look, here's the thing is like, I don't think it's definitely not unheard of, but it's not egregious to take a chance on a quarterback and have it not work out, right? Like we've said, like quarterbacks are a crapshoot coming out of college, even the highly touted ones in the first round. Like just because you go grab like a guy who's got a, you know, some good prospect behind him doesn't mean that anything's going to happen, right? So it's like, I get it. You drafted Mac Jones. It didn't really work out. The question is, does this become the repeated pattern for like the next 5-10 years? Like, does this behavior repeat itself? Does this process repeat itself? Are we able to just say, hey, we made a mistake. It didn't work out. We're going to move on and we're going to correct the problem. And it's a lot easier said than done, as we've seen.
It is a lot easier said than done. I mean, going back to square one should be a frightening proposition for anyone that's a fan of this team. And, you know, like, that's why, frankly, for the last 2 years, you know, when people gave up on Mac Jones, and sometimes people almost celebrated it like, oh, this guy sucks, get him out of there. And it's like, no, you can't just give up on him that quickly. Like, the worst thing that could have happened to this franchise is the Mac Jones thing not working out. Like, if you're a fan of this team, if you think it's just going to be as simple as you plug in the next guy or you go draft the next guy or you sign the next guy, those kind of moves never seem to work out in the NFL. It is really, really hard to find a franchise quarterback. So when this guy comes in, he flashes in his first year and we think we have something with him, you know, to watch it fall apart the last 2 years is something that no Patriot fan should be happy about. Even if you thought Mac Jones was terrible as a player and you got frustrated with him, because now you're just back to square one completely. And guess what? As bad as Mac Jones has been the next 3 years, there is a great chance that the guy that they draft and brings in here next year is worse. There are worse quarterbacks to have been drafted. There are Trey Lances. There are EJ Manuels. There are Mitchell Trubisky. There are many worse quarterbacks that you could have drafted. You might draft the next guy. You might go up. And then where are you in 3 years? It becomes a vicious cycle.
It does. And look, you know, but here's the question I have, because this is something that popped in my head, you know, the other day as I'm watching Bailey Zappe, right? And, you know, this may be kind of, it may sound crazy. You may be able to disprove this, you know, fairly easily. But like, one thing that I'm thinking to myself is, okay, what was this ever intended to be, like a quick rebuild with Mac Jones as our franchise quarterback? And I say that for like a couple of what at the time maybe weren't so obvious, but to me now it seems almost like obvious reasons, right? Now, the first is that we didn't make any moves to go up and get Mac Jones, right? I mean, you remember on draft night, we talked about it. He kind of fell into our lap kind of luckily, and we took him there because he was sitting there, right? The Patriots didn't trade up to get Mac Jones. There was never any, you know, talk about Mac Jones is this, he's that, he's our guy. There was no aggressiveness. You know, it was almost just like, hey, we need a quarterback. This kid fell to us in the first round. Let's take him, right? After that, we sit here for the next 2-3 years and we talk almost on a weekly basis about how they're not addressing the big holes on offense. They're not, you know, putting the pieces, including the coach, the proper coaching until now around Mac in order for him to succeed and flourish. And on top of that, it seems like the whole focus of the rebuild has been primarily on the defense. If you look at like where like some of the, I mean, you know, I know you brought in like Hunter Henry and like Jonnu Smith, but if you like look at where a lot of the money went for the free agent signings, like guys like Jalen Mills, guys like Matthew Judon.
And
like,
a lot of the draft picks.
And a lot of the draft pick, if you look at where a lot of the draft picks were going, it almost looks like to me, the whole idea was you spend 3 years rebuilding a Super Bowl quality defense, and then you figure out the offense and the quarterback situation after that, and you hope that you take a kid in the first round like Mac Jones, maybe if you take a flyer on him, if he shows you in those 3 years that maybe he can be the guy, or you know, if he comes and he does some good stuff, you hang on to him. If not, you move on and you complete phase two of the rebuild. Like to me, I'm almost wondering whether this was all a very calculated plan where Mac Jones was never intended 100% to be the guy. He was a flyer that was intended to hold us over for a couple of years while we rebuilt the defense. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it goes back, Justin, to what we talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast, which is that Bill Belichick believes that he can win with a mediocre quarterback, right? It goes back to the Ian O'Connor story from 2018, where Belichick said, give me any one of 15 guys and I can build a winning team based on the strength of my program. That was what Belichick believed. And I think when Belichick drafted Mac Jones, and spare me the mythology about Robert Kraft making that draft pick, it's hogwash. It's ridiculous. Kraft may have had a little influence, but Bill Belichick drafted Mac Jones. All roads lead to Rome, right? Mac Jones's failure is Bill Belichick's failure. But when Belichick made that pick, he was saying, give me a mediocre guy that runs a system, you know, isn't the most talented guy in the world, but is supposedly intelligent, supposedly a good decision maker. A lot of things we're seeing weren't true, by the way, but that's what Jones' skill set supposedly was. Give me that guy that's not the most talented guy in the world, but can run my system. And I'll build the defense around him. I'll plug in a few spare parts on the offense to score enough points and we'll win games.
Yes.
That's what Belichick believed. And that's why he drafted Mac Jones. Simple. It's very simple.
Exactly. But like to that point though, and I think we're both kind of saying it, it's like, because of that, I'm not sitting here shocked that A, the Mac Jones experiment like didn't work out, but B, that, you know, we're, still trying to figure out the offense, because like to your point, like we've done exactly that. Like, yes, when you're in the thick of it, it's maybe a little difficult to dissect and break it down. But looking back where we are towards the end of this 2023 season from the Mac Jones draft until now, I'm very much now of the mindset with what we just said, which is Mac came in here as a bridge guy, never really supposed to be the next Tom Brady or the next big franchise quarterback. He was just supposed to be good enough. I think that was Bill's thing. Mac just needs to be good enough. And then I'm going to rebuild the defense and we're going to go out and we're going to win games. And that's what he tried to do. That is what we got a glimpse of in Mac's rookie year. And then obviously we've just seen that the offense hasn't been able to hold up its end of the weight to where the defense can carry them to that goal.
And Mac hasn't been able to hold up.
Exactly. And Mac hasn't been able.
Because to me, Justin, and this is what we were going to talk about next. So you're transitioning perfectly into the next topic, which is like, get the giant spoon out. Because I'm going to eat a giant bag of crap on this one. But I will admit that what happened in the first half of that game last Thursday night with Bailey Zappe and Mac Jones is a huge indictment on Mac Jones, because being quite honest with you, that was maybe the best this offense has looked against a good defense, by the way, on the road in a long time. It was smoother. Zappe looked smoother. They look crisper than maybe at any point even in Mac Jones's career. Even though we know Mac has had some good games, everything always feels like a struggle with Mac. And I'm going to admit that I was wrong about a few things about Zappe. I'm not sure that Zappe is a franchise quarterback. I'm not even sure if he can play backup in this league. That's one of the things we're going to see over these final five or 6 weeks, whatever's left. But what I will admit I was wrong about is to say that there was a big difference between Mac and Zappe. That was wrong. To say that Mac was that much better than Zappe, that was wrong. Zappe looks to me like a better quarterback than Mac. So why did they, I'm saying that on one half, but that was an impressive half. So why did they stick with Mac for so long?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, look, the first thing that comes to mind is the fact that they didn't really have many other options. I mean, like, you look at the position they put themselves in after, you know, the Cam Newton experiment, and it really was. I mean, we were like, you know, you remember it was Mac Jones, it was Brian Hoyer, who, when he did get his time out in the field, looked like a geriatric, just decrepit version of himself, right? Nobody we wanted in the field.
He wasn't even that great to begin with.
No, exactly. He wasn't even that good to begin with. And then we've just had a revolving door of third string nobodies that, you know, have kind of been in and out of the practice squad and whatnot. And, you know, you have a guy like Bailey Zappe who, you know, we said, you know, maybe he has some talent. They obviously brought him in here for a reason. He had some accolades in college, but we hadn't really seen it up to this point. I mean, I think really what it comes down to is, we had the best first half or best half of football from an offensive standpoint that we've had statistically since Tom Brady was our quarterback, right? And now you could look at it as just like a, hey, you know, it's been almost 4 years. I mean, eventually you're going to have a good half of football, right? But like, it's not a coincidence that I think it happens on the road against a good team, and it happened when you injected some fresh life and gave Bailey Zappe, you know, kind of a full week as the named starter to kind of go to get the locker room together and go out there and get things done. Now, the thing that did bother me, I have to say, was the fact that we went scoreless in the second half, because that made it seem a little bit more fluky to me. But nevertheless, that was still the most impressive first half of Patriots football that I can remember seeing since number 12 was under center.
So why do you think they stuck with Mac for so long? Because I actually have my own Occam's razor explanation for that. And it's very simple, Justin. The gymnastics Patriots fans in the media weave themselves into to try and explain what they're seeing in front of them. These crazy conspiracy theories. Belichick wants to screw Kraft. Belichick wants to screw Mac. Belichick wants to tank. It's like, it's bonkers. It's very simple why they stuck with Mac for this long. Because Belichick drafted him and invested in him and wanted to give him a chance to develop. He probably stuck with him too long. But why should anyone need any kind of conspiracy theory to explain the fact that Bill Belichick blew a first round pick on any player after what we've seen the last 7 or 8 years from the draft from this team? Belichick has missed on way more first round picks than he's hit in the last 10 years, right? Mac Jones is just another Bill Belichick swing and miss. What Belichick thought he could do with a mediocre, talented quarterback, he was wrong about it. And they stuck with Mac, even though there was probably some consternation behind the scenes, even though Belichick was probably pissed at Mac at certain points, especially last year, he still drafted him, and he felt that he had to give him the opportunity to develop into a good quarterback. And he gave him that chance until it just became abundantly apparent that it wasn't going to happen. And he finally went to Zappe, who for some reason, it seems like Belichick doesn't even like.
Yeah. And look, I agree, but like, to me, I think the thing that like, I really can't wrap my head around is the fact that like, you know, I feel like we talk about Mac as if we made like a, a Trey Lance type of move to get him. It was if we made like a Bryce Young type of move to get him. Like he fell to us. And you know, the Patriots always, especially the way Bill drafts, it's always kind of just like a see who's available at that position. Take the best player at that position. Like if Mac Jones wasn't available, if some other team had taken him before our 15th pick, you know, who do we take? And, now we're not sitting here talking about like, you know, blowing a first round pick on a quarterback. But like the reality is that Mac just happened to be what Bill thought was a good opportunity. One of the best guys on the board at the pick. Like Mac was not a highly sought after guy. Like we didn't do anything crazy to bring him in here. So like, again, when I hear people talking about, you know, everything we invested in Mac, and we did, we took him with the first round pick and, you know, this and that. I just want people to remember that, like, we're kind of even lucky, or I guess you could call it unlucky now, that Mac Jones ever wound up a Patriot, because I don't know if he was ever our, you know, go-to locked in game plan. So for me, I find it very reasonable to think that, you know, where he didn't work out and we're ready to move on. And maybe, just maybe, there was a reason why Bill didn't do anything to go up and get him and had that mentality. Well, if he's there, I'll take him. But this isn't a kid that I'm willing to go out of my way
they traded up, traded down, took him at one, took him at 10, took him at 15, 20, wherever. They've invested 3 years in this guy.
For sure. No, definitely.
And that's the thing. I mean, that's what makes it so devastating. It's like, yeah, they didn't trade a huge amount of draft capital or anything like that, to your point, but they still wasted really three seasons, certainly the last two seasons, trying to get this guy to get to the next level. And he's proving that he's not capable of it. And I disagree with you, because like I think it's a huge setback to this franchise. Like I think that when you take a guy like Mac, you take a quarterback and you invest in that quarterback to this extent, even if you don't trade up to get him, it's just a huge blow. Like you're going back to square one now and you have nothing at the position.
Well, so no, look, I'm not saying it's not a huge setback. I'm just saying like, I'm not that surprised, because like, if you told me that this was a guy that the Patriots had on their radar since day one, and from day one we had known that, hey, this is Bill's guy. Bill's going to do whatever it takes to trade up and get Mac Jones. We're going to preemptively do this to get Mac Jones. And then it didn't work out. I would be, or we saw what we've seen the last 3 years, I would be a lot more surprised, I guess, and a lot more taken back. I guess what I'm saying is,
yeah, you'd be surprised, Justin, because when you look at Belichick's draft picks the last 10 years, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that he blew a first round pick on Mac Jones. It didn't work out, right? But I guess maybe I still have deep down inside a little too much faith in him, but I feel like when you take a quarterback in the first round, you're expecting that quarterback to be your starter for the foreseeable future. And I am surprised that it turned into such a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm surprised that, well, here's the thing. I'm surprised after his rookie year that this is where we ended up in year three. That's what I'm surprised about. What I'm not surprised about is the fact that he didn't wind up being the long-term guy. That's something that doesn't shock me. But the route that his career and his trajectory took after that first year, that is what shocks me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point too, because certainly, I mean, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, clearly based on the recent 10, 15 year track record of the league, you know, it's a less than 50-50 prop.
Right.
But usually if a guy comes in and he has a good rookie season like Mac had, most of those guys on that list of quarterbacks that had like the best rookie seasons of all time, most of them turn into at least good quarterbacks, you know? And so for someone to go from a Pro Bowl level, who is a top 100 NFL player, according to his peers after his first year, to go from that to a guy that I don't even think is going to be a starter, is kind of a stunning drop. But I will say, and this was one of the things I wanted to bring up, so this kind of leads into the next topic, which is like, you know, you look at Mitchell Trubisky, right, as like the textbook paradigm of what you're talking about, because Mitchell Trubisky, I think it was in 2018, his second year with the Bears, I want to say, he threw 24 touchdowns and 12 picks, right? He led the Bears into the playoffs. I think they may have won the division.
I think they were like 13-3 or 12-4, something like 13-3,
yeah. That's exactly right. They were a really good team, and Trubisky had a really good year. And you watch Mitchell Trubisky now, 4 years later, that guy sucks. He sucks. He has no business being on an NFL field. There was one play where he was running for a first down, and he looks behind him to see if he's about to get tackled, and he gets tackled because he slowed down to look. He doesn't even want to be out there. Why is this guy on an NFL roster? He will never be successful, and he will never get back to that level that he was at when he had that one successful year. And I got to say, that feels like where Mac Jones is headed too. And Mac may save his career. I could be totally wrong, but Mitchell Trubisky, if you're looking for an example of a guy that comes into the league, has one great year, and ends up absolutely sucking and having no business on an NFL field for whatever reason, Mitchell Trubisky is the paradigm for that, in terms of like what might happen to Mac Jones.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's very, very similar. The only difference is we actually saw a season where the Bears under Mitch Trubisky, they were a legit contender. We never saw that with Mac Jones and the Patriots.
Yeah. Exactly. To that point, like Mitchell Trubisky, that's why, like, I mean, even a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, I said the Steelers might be better with Mitchell Trubisky than Kenny Pickett. I mean, I'm confused about that now, because that, I'm not saying Trubisky's good, but Pickett is that bad too. But that was obviously a stupid take, because, to be perfectly honest, because Trubisky is horrible. He is horrible. And if you could even get 80 or 75% of the Mitchell Trubisky that the Bears got that 1 year, the Steelers would be a good team. The problem is Mitchell Trubisky is psychologically damaged. He doesn't look like he wants to be out there. He plays afraid. He plays scared. He plays fundamentally horrible. And the guy's not even worth having on your roster right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? It's funny, and not to go down like a rabbit hole with this guy, but you know, you look at what happened the last 2 weeks with the Bengals in this Jake Browning kid, right? Somebody who virtually, you know, nobody really knew who he was, kind of flew under the radar in college and the draft and the NFL so far. And he has looked like a bona fide NFL starter the last 2 weeks, going 2-0. And like, to your point, it's like the Bengals have a very solid backup quarterback that can come in there and win games, and he's a nobody. The Steelers have a former former number three overall pick who led a team to a 13-3 record, and I believe either the number one or number two overall seed, and they can't even get a spot start out of him. It shows you just how tricky the NFL really is. And not like just to be a starting quarterback or be able to be a competent quarterback in the NFL, but also that, like, to our point that we always say, the draft capital or the praise coming out of college, like, it really does all go out the window when you hit the league.
What did you think, Justin, about one thing I thought about this week is that you look at the history of Thursday night football, and weird things happen in Thursday night games. Do you feel like that take the results from Thursday night with like a grain of salt because it was a Thursday night game? Didn't it just kind of feel like the Steelers really weren't ready to go in that first half? I mean, I'm not taking away from Bailey Zappe. He looked better in that half than Mac Jones ever looked in 3 years, even at his best. That's the hard truth, in my opinion, for all of us Mac apologists, including myself out there. But don't we have to take it with a grain of salt because it was a Thursday night game? The Steelers just, I mean, you look at what happened in the second half of that game. The Steelers got warmed up on defense. They didn't let up a point. At what point do you have to just say, how much caution do you have about enthusiasm because it was a Thursday night game?
Well, I mean, the caution about my enthusiasm isn't just because it was a Thursday night game. It's because that it was a tale of two halves. I mean, in the second half, like we said, we, you know, we, what was it? The first half was 20 to 21 to nothing and it three. Ended or 20 yeah, yeah 21 to 3 and it ended 21 to 18. So it clearly was a tale of two halves. So that to me is concerning within itself, the fact that that wasn't a full four quarter performance. But you know, the Thursday night games are funky. It was weird too. I mean, the other thing I don't want to overlook it, like we've talked about this, like we've said that, like, you know, the Steelers, are they fraudulent? I mean, we're not really sure how they're as good as they are with guys like Kenny Pickett or Mitch Trubisky. They just lost to the Cardinals the week before. They come out in a short week on Thursday night and lose at home to the Patriots, like with a slow start in the first half. Like Thursday night, definitely could have played a little bit into it. But I think part of it too is like maybe the Steelers are coming back down to earth. Like maybe that's not a 7-4, 7-5 team. You know what I mean? And I think look, the Patriots have showed that they're probably even.
There's definitely some truth to that, right? Like the Steelers aren't. I mean, it's surprising that they've been winning as much as they have.
Exactly. And like, when you think about, like, you look at this team, like you look at what this Patriots team has done on defense the last like four or five games. I saw a stat heading into the Thursday night game. The last four games in the league, or last four games of the season, their defense gave up the lowest points per game and they were 0-4. Right. So it was like, this team was basically, despite being not the worst team in the NFL, they were performing like the worst team in the NFL. But this was clear. The Patriots are clearly a team that has a decent defense. And if they could just get it together remotely on offense, they're going to be able to compete. They've shown that they can compete, even though their record doesn't really, tell that story. But I'm not super shocked at what I saw on Thursday night. And I think we both kind of said, you know, the worst thing that could happen would be the Patriots go out there and get a victory. But I think we both thought it was very much so within the realm of possibility, because I don't think the Patriots are as bad as their record is. And I don't, especially with a new quarterback, and I don't think the Steelers are as good as their record is, especially honestly, with their backup quarterback.
Just full disclosure, like I thought they were going to get crushed on Thursday night. Like I thought it was going to be like 24-3. I thought TJ Watt would have a field day with Bailey Zappi. I thought, you know, the Steelers defense would devour this offense. And I was wrong. I mean, it just came out of absolute left field, that result. Like, I mean, really, just like a stunning, but I actually thought the Steelers were going to crush the Patriots. But what you just said actually segues perfectly into the next topic. So let's talk about this, which is the final five games of this season now, and like, what are we rooting for as Patriots fans over these last five games? You know, going into this game, I was firmly in camp. Look, I don't want the Patriots to tank, but I just think losing is probably the best thing for this franchise right now.
Right.
And I had a lot of mixed emotions watching this game Thursday night, because it was such a great game. They made great plays. It was hard not to root for them the way they came out and played. But at the same time, you're sitting there saying, oh, you know, this is going to burn them. This is going to burn. They're going to win a couple games and they're going to fall in the draft. And then this, you know, come next April, what good is it going to do them? You know? So what are you rooting for in these last five games? Cause I'm really not sure where I am right now as a Patriots fan, to be honest with you.
You know, for me, it's tough, because I weigh a couple of different things out here, right? I look at it and I say, okay, obviously when you're in a rebuild and you're in a position like this team is, you know, you want that high draft capital, right? But I think to both of our points, like unless you're going to use that on like a generational tackle or like a generational receiver, I'm not so sold like that you need that top spot if your goal is to go out and get a quarterback, right? Like we talked about how we're not so impressed with maybe like, you know, a couple of the big names that are up there for the quarterback class this year. We've talked about, you know, the poor hit rate on quarterbacks in the first round. So like, if your goal is to go out and draft a quarterback, I'm not super disappointed if they drop a couple spots. If your goal is to go out and get a Marvin Harrison Jr., like that tackle out of Penn State, yeah, that's disappointing. But I look at it and I say, okay, when you have a team like this that still has so many young guys, I mean, don't forget, like this Patriots like offense and defense is still pretty young, right? You got a lot of guys that came in the last couple of years through the draft. And we have all these holes. I would really just like to know where we stand. Like, can you, because my biggest problem right now is like, I know this team has holes, but like, it's very ambiguous. Like, it's very tough to definitively say, okay, we are all set here. We need help here with some of these positions. Like, I would just really like to go into this 2024 draft and season knowing what the definite holes are, what we need to address, maybe giving some of these younger guys a chance to show out a little bit. And you know what? If they show out and we win some games because of it, and we know that we have somebody we can rely on or at least plug in next season or moving forward, that's okay with me. I think I would rather go into next year, maybe with another win or two, having identified some contributors who can be here next year and into the future, than, you know, having a first round pick, maybe one or two spots higher, but just being absolutely clueless where we stand as a roster.
I mean, look, I think that's one of the things you have to be looking for in these last five games is, where are the pieces? Are they there? Like, to give you an old man analogy, right? 1992, last time they were this bad. Bruce Armstrong was a perennial Pro Bowl tackle. We knew he was a great player. I don't think they have anyone like that on this offense to build around. Bruce Armstrong was instrumental in the development of Drew Bledsoe. Okay, having that backside tackle who was a Pro Bowl caliber player was a huge piece that I think, frankly, this team lacks. Maybe a more apt analogy, Ben Coates, right, was on that roster. Ben Coates was a borderline Hall of Fame tight end. He hadn't, as of yet, shown that he could even play in this league in 1992. He became a stud almost instantly in 93 when Bledsoe got here. The point I'm trying to make is, are there hidden pieces on this roster that are individuals that we'll be able to count on in different ways? How about this? Is even another analogy to 92. Scott Zolak came in and won two games in 1992. There's only two wins. He was a solid backup quarterback behind Drew Bledsoe for years. 6 years later, when they needed him to win games to get into the playoffs, when Bledsoe broke his finger in 1998, Zolak was able to step in and win, right? Again, that's what you're looking for in these last five games. Where are those glimmers of players that are going to be here for this rebuild that are going to be able to fill some kind of role over the next 3 to 5 seasons? Are those guys even here right now?
Exactly. That's really my big thing is like, yeah, I'm thinking about so many guys. You know, I was looking at the roster breakdown the other day I was looking at some of the draft picks and some of the recent draft classes. And I'm thinking to myself, like, there's so many names that like, we still got no clue what their status as a Patriot is or what their usefulness as a Patriot is. Like I agree. I want to know if there's any diamonds in the rough. I want to know if there's any potential. And you know what?
So let me ask you this then, Justin. Yeah. I want to ask you this. So let me throw a few names out there, yeah, the guys that I think about in this light. Let's start with the quarterback, Zappe. Okay. Is Bailey Zappe someone that has starter potential? Probably not. You know, what if he comes out and balls out these?
Yeah.
Can Bailey Zappe we talked last week about the need for this team to have a bridge quarterback. Can Bailey Zappe be that bridge quarterback if they bring in a young guy? And then add a little twist to that. His personality and the sort of like, rah, rah, I'm so competitive, which is a great thing for him, I think. Is he going to be a guy that's going to be able to do that? You know, but can Bailey Zappe be a backup on this team?
Well, I think the short answer to that is yes, because he has been a backup, right? He spent the last 2 years effectively being a backup. And honestly, I know he didn't look so great against the Chargers last week, but if you think about it, when he was called upon to come in and play and start some games last season when, you know, Mac had his high ankle sprain, he looked pretty good. He won a couple games. He came and he played all right. When he was called upon, you know, to come in on Thursday night and start in Pittsburgh, he looked pretty good. Like, I think this is a kid who, you know, by no means am I sitting here waving the franchise quarterback flag, but I'm looking at a kid on a rookie deal who's, you know, still going to have another 2 years as a Patriot. And I think he's done enough to at least give him that backup or even, you know, the third spot on the depth chart. I think, I personally, to me, I don't understand why you would get rid of him and move on to somebody else when you have a kid who's been here for 2 years, still in a rookie deal.
So he's been, he started four games. He started four games and he's 3-1 as a starter.
Yeah.
I'm no Bailey Zappe fan. You know this. Anyone that's listening to the show knows this. But you can't argue with results, especially when those results are wins and losses. The guy's been out there. If he balls out, right, he goes, if they go 4-1 or 5-0, I mean, in these last five games, and it looks like a different team. And now all of a sudden you're picking like 12 instead of picking like three or two, right? Do you consider him as even a starter if he really shows over the, is there a pathway for that?
Why not? I mean, I'm not saying I would necessarily maybe want that or rely on that, but I think he would definitely earn the right to go into camp competing for that starting job. Now, the one thing that I think you risk is, you know, do you want that sort of situation where, hey, you got a guy who could potentially be a starter, this, and that. You draft another kid to potentially come in, and now you got a quarterback controversy that's dominating the news at camp, the offseason, the locker room. So, I mean, like, is that what we want? I mean, would we rather go into next year definitively knowing who our starting quarterback is for whatever reason that may be?
Well, of course you would, but the fact of the matter is that's, you know, whatever they do, it's going to be a huge question mark, the quarterback position for this franchise for at least next year and probably beyond that. Like, they go out, they get the top three pick, they draft a guy, it's still going to be a huge question mark. So no matter what they do, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty around the quarterback position. So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, it, you know, I'm just trying to extrapolate all these different scenarios and saying to myself, what if Zappe really balls out these last five games? You know, what's that going to look like next year? Is there any way you convince yourself that he's the guy? And that's just really maybe more than anything shows that we're really desperate as a franchise.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I mean, let me ask you this, like, if Bailey Zappe goes out in, you know, wins another three games or he looks really serviceable, like, and then you say, oh, maybe I can turn this first round pick into a Marvin Harrison Jr. or into what, you know, a stalwart like tackle. I mean, would you rather that? Like, would you rather that knowing that Bailey Zappe isn't Patrick Mahomes, but he just may be good enough that if you give him some weapons and have that defense behind him, that you can compete?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a real question. That's why maybe these last five games are going to be a little more interesting now than they've been in the past. Like, let's say hypothetically, he goes out, he beats the Chiefs, you know, he beats the Broncos. They lose in Buffalo. They beat the Jets and they end up 4-1. And now Zappe's 7-2 in the games he started. Like, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you start to convince yourself maybe it works. Now, look at what Mac did in his first 12 or 13 games as like a cautionary tale too, right? Because we've seen how many times quarterbacks come in, flash for a half a season, three quarters of a season, look really good. And then defensive coordinators figure them out and that's it. And they never can develop beyond that. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting question, but I think it's one of the things to watch is like how Zappe does, what happens with him these next five games. Do you think you can count on him as a backup, a bridge guy, or even more based on his performance? A couple other pieces, Justin, that I think you want to look at still. At some point, Pop Douglas is going to come back on the field. And he's someone that might be the kind of player that a young quarterback that hypothetically might come in here could rely on.
Yeah, look, I like Douglas. Do I think Douglas is like a DK Metcalf or a Justin Jefferson type of receiver that like a young quarterback's going to come in and build that chemistry with? Like, no, I don't think he's of that caliber, but like, I do think he's good, but like, I don't know. Let me ask you this. Like, do you want Pop Douglas to be like that number one guy that your quarterback's coming in to have as that go-to guy next year? Like, I still like am not convinced that we have a number one wide receiver on this roster.
No, we don't have a number one. We don't have a number two, and they don't have a number three. I mean, I don't think they have anything. I mean, you know, at the wide receiver position, and that's what I'm saying. Like, one of the things I'm looking for in these last five games is Pop Douglas is a young guy. He's going to be here next year. He's on a good contract. I want to see what he does to see if he can be a piece of the puzzle moving forward. Like, I want him to finish the season strong.
Right.
Healthy. Okay. Have a few good games, make some plays so that next year, when you're presumably you're bringing in a young quarterback, you've at least got someone here that's young and up and coming that can dovetail a career with that quarterback, and that knows the system, has a little experience in it, and can maybe make a play for a young player. So I think Douglas is an interesting one. I'll throw out a couple other names. I mean, City So has had a terrific second half of his rookie career campaign so far. I think he's a piece that will be a good piece for next year. Michael Owenay, who's a free agent, to me, they need to pay that guy and bring him back. He plays guard. He plays tackle. He's changed their whole offensive line. Like, Michael Owenayu, you don't want to be bringing in two tackles with a rookie quarterback next year. You're probably going to have to bring in one because I don't think Trent Brown comes back. I mean, I think you have to sign Owenayu.
Yeah, I'd like him to come back. I mean, look, if you could what's Andrew's situation as well? Is he?
I think he's under contract. He'll be back.
Okay, so, I mean, look, if you could start off with those three – I mean, and now you're just trying to plug and play those last two people. Or, you know, you go out and maybe you even draft that left tackle from Penn State and add him to that mix, right? And that you got him, you know, City Sow and Owenayu, and then Andrews. Like, I think you're in a decent spot, I think, you know.
What about Hunter Henry? Would you pay him? You have to pay him a lot of money, but who's going to play tight end next year?
Yeah, I like Hunter Henry. I do, but like, to me, I don't know. Like, I would have to look at his age. Like, I know this is like his second deal, right? So I think he's got to be at least like 28, 29 years old. So, I mean, it just depends on how much left you think he's got in the tank. But like, he's probably been I would say what? Our most consistent receiving weapon like the last couple years?
It's not mutually exclusive that you could say he's a disappointment and their most consistent
right
receiver. If you think about it, and look, do I want Hunter Henry back? No. Do I want to pay him to come back? I'd be more than comfortable with walking away from Hunter Henry this year. I think he's a good tight end, but probably not a great one. But when you look at what they have at that position, if they don't re-sign Hunter Henry, who the heck is going to play tight end on this team? Like, there's no young one that they can say, oh, we're developing this guy. There's no backup. Gesicki's on a 1-year deal and he's been terrible. I don't even know if Hunter Henry would want to come back here based on what's happened here the last few years, but
yeah,
they may have no choice but to try and overpay to bring him back. All right, Justin. So it sounds like you're maybe a little bit off the tanking pathway for these last five games. You want to win or two coming down the stretch here, or what are you rooting for?
I don't want pointless wins. That's the thing. And I think that's where it's going to be. I know, but it's pointless in the sense that like last week's win, I don't think was pointless because it gave us a fresh perspective. Excuse me. It gave us a fresh perspective on Bailey Zappe, Mac Jones, and the whole quarterback situation, right? So I don't think that was pointless. By the same token, if we were to go out and get another win next week because Pop Douglas comes back and goes for 100 yards, 2 touchdowns, 10 receptions, like that to me isn't pointless. But like if we're just squeaking out wins based on mediocrity, another team just being super poor, like to me, that's a pointless win. I want a win that I can say, hey, it doesn't help us this year. It may even hurt our draft position, but it helps our prospects in terms of knowing where we stand with some of these players, some of these guys in our roster and helping evaluate potential moving forward.
See, I'm no tanker. And I don't really think tanking is worthwhile because the best players come from all over the draft. So you tank in football, it doesn't matter. This is a unique situation. If the Patriots had, like, say, CJ Stroud on their roster, but they were 3-10, and I would want to see them look good in this final. I'll say, okay, we have the quarterback, we have the guy. Now I want to see them start to play better so I can get excited for next year. Because they don't have the quarterback,
I worry that the wins that they might pile up in these last four games are really just going to come back to burn them in April when it comes time to draft, because the Bears are definitely going to be ahead of them. And supposedly they want a quarterback. You know, there's probably a dozen teams in the NFL that are going to be in a market for a quarterback. Whoever gets the number two pick, if it's not the Patriots, is going to be in a position to trade with any of those teams for Drake May or Caleb Williams, whoever the Bears don't take. I worry that a couple wins here down the stretch, they'll feel great, but they're really going to set this team into a mediocrity kind of trajectory for the next chapter.
Well, you know, one thing too that I also don't want to overlook, right, in terms of the impact of, you know, the last couple of games of the season could have for next year and for moving forward is, you know, we always talk about how for a long time, you know, when you had Brady and, you know, you were winning Super Bowls, New England, you know, always for the most part was somewhat of a destination for players who wanted to come, wanted to compete, wanted to win championships. Right now, obviously you can't say the same about New England right now, but I think what you definitely can say is that the way that the rest of the league, the rest of the players in the NFL, the way the kids in college right now perceive the New England Patriots, I think does have an impact on their future. And if anything, if just squeaking out a couple more games, maybe, who knows, the snowball effect or the ripple effect that has in terms of maybe changing somebody's viewpoint in terms of, you know, oh, maybe, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so bad to come play for New England. Oh, maybe there is potential up in Foxborough. Like, oh, maybe it does make some of these young kids coming out of college excited to get the call from Robert Kraft or Bill Belichick or whoever is there in the draft room. Like, I think I don't want to overlook that. Is you don't want your
See, I don't even worry about that, because I just think the ship has sailed on that anyways. Like, whether they win 3 games, 4 games, 5 games, whatever, even 7 or 8 games, no free agents coming here unless they're getting paid. Like, that whole Brady free agent thing is gone. This is seen as a declining franchise, mediocre at best, I think, regardless of what happens in the next 4 games. So I don't even think about that.
Well, look, I definitely don't think it's anywhere. Like, no one's coming to New England right now to like compete and win championships, right? But like, if you know, we talk about wanting the Patriots to be more aggressive in terms of going out and signing players and maybe, you know, being a little bit smarter with their draft choices. But like, don't you think part of that means that like people need to be at least somewhat excited about, or at least even if it's not excited, even just okay, you know, okay with the idea of coming to play in New England. Like, I feel like even if it's, you know, if you're talking 3 wins versus 5 wins, like, when do you close the season out, you know, getting shut out in every half or scoring 3 to 7 points a game and looking like a dumpster fire versus, you know, you come out there and you're looking like you can compete, you got some guys and maybe people start to envision themselves as part of that like equation to help the rebuild. I don't know. I'm not saying it's a ginormous piece, but I could definitely see the last couple games having an impact in terms of like the perception of the 2024 Patriots.
All right, one more take on the Patriots, Justin, then we're going to wrap up the Patriots podcast. We're going to move to the Around the League podcast. We've been charting the Bill Belichick doomsday clock for 2 years, right? And I've been very aggressive in moving that clock forward. I'm moving my clock backwards. I've been at 11:59 for like the last month, right? I'm moving back to like 11:45, and here's why. I just feel like you're hearing some trickles coming out that maybe they kind of work this thing out in Belichick's back next year. It feels to me like, and a big part of this is Mac Jones being acknowledged as a failure and putting that behind the franchise, that Belichick is going to be able to go to Robert Kraft and make the argument that, look, we blew the Mac Jones pick. It was not a good pick. We gave him his opportunity. He couldn't play. Give me another chance with another quarterback and the results will be better. And I don't know, like, I know that probably still it's time to move on. But I just think that if you're Robert Kraft, aren't you going to at least consider and listen to that?
Definitely. I think you definitely listen to it. I mean, I got to say, I know we've both kind of said like, hey, man, something needs to change, or, you know, Bill kind of seems like he may be at the end of his rope here, but I don't know, just something this whole season, even just the last couple of weeks, like ever since that everything went down the drain for this team, I don't know. It just, I never fully acknowledged in the back of my mind that like he was out of here, that it was a foregone conclusion. Like it just kind of always seemed like maybe to me it was a little bit more hype than reality. And I think it's for reasons like this. I think like Thursday was like a very good reality, you know, reality check in the sense that, hey, Bill Belichick still can put together an elite defense, even without their two best players. And what we're seeing is that we've been the victim of really poor quarterback play. And I think that within itself, like you said, just inches that doomsday clock backwards just a teeny bit, because it just gives him that much more breathing room.
Right. Like the dust is going to settle from the whole Mac Jones thing. You know, cooler heads are going to prevail, and the game of finger pointing and blaming is actually going to kind of go about Mac Jones, like whoever was responsible and whoever, you did this, Bill, you did this, Bob, that's going to be said. And then it's really going to be about moving the franchise forward. And I get this sense just from like the way he's speaking, the way Belichick still cares. The fact that the team hasn't quit yet.
Right.
Some of the things that have been said publicly, very subtly, reporting, whatever, that you're picking up, I just get the sense that he doesn't necessarily want to leave. Included in that, I would include in that the leak the morning of the Buffalo game in October that, hey, I still have a contract here, guys. I'm planning to be here. You know, the report from Ben Volen last week that he's still preparing for the draft as if he's going to be here. Like, and maybe the cooler heads prevail and we say, okay, let's figure this out. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of thinking that too right now. Like I'm thinking maybe Bill Belichick is here for the 2024 season. And you know what? Like, honestly, I'm okay with it. Like I really am okay with it. Because what's Bill's big thing always been? Like we've always known he makes some questionable draft picks. We've always known, you know, he's not like an offensive guru. His thing has always been the defense and, you know, his ability to scheme games, make in-game adjustments. And it's like, I still think he can do those things. Like, I mean, we still have one of the best defenses in the league right now, statistically, and we have nothing to play for, and we're down our two best guys. And these guys are coming out every week and just still stifling offenses. So I look at it and I'm like, okay, this is clearly a coach and a team who have not quit in each other. Not to say that that isn't far around the corner. You know, I don't know how much more they both can take, but I definitely see room for opportunity and growth in 2024.
Because to me, the biggest compliment you can pay to Bill Belichick after all this and everything, and I know you'll agree with this, we watch every week. There's been a lot that's gone wrong. There's been a lot he's done wrong. There's both on and off the field. They have not quit on Bill Belichick at any point, even when they're at their lowest and their worst. They are playing hard on both sides, especially on defense, but I think on both sides of the ball. They might not be very good on offense, and they suck, and they get frustrated. They're undisciplined. There's all kinds of things wrong, but they have not quit, and that is the greatest compliment to Belichick and whatever he does, that he still has his team playing hard after everything it's been through this year.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is, like, we've seen teams that have had or have been in a lot better positions than this New England Patriots team currently is, you know, quit in a season or quit in a coach, quit in each other. So like you said, the fact that this team, these players with this coach are all still kind of going and busting their ass week in and week out, I think it speaks – I think it speaks volumes. And hopefully, you know, maybe whatever little remnants of the Patriots way are left, like that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a team that, hey, this is a bad year for us. Things haven't gone our way, but we're never going to quit. And that to me is the old school Patriots way, like that mentality, that toughness.
And I'll just say one more final thought and then probably wrap it up and we'll go to around the league. But like, you know, I'm no Zappy guy. I've been a Mac apologist. I admit I was wrong about a lot of the things I said in that regard. Fine. I'm eating my crap sandwich on that. Fine. I wonder what this team's record would be if they had been playing Bailey Zappe for longer. If they had won, you know, Indianapolis, Commanders, Raiders, there were probably three or four wins in there with just a little bit better quarterback play. And I think that you can't deny that. So, you know, as much as I've been skeptical of Zappe, and I still am, you know, it's been really bad with Mac, and that probably has killed them and cost them a few wins. So that's how I'm going to end it, bud. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, just, you know, like we said, I can't remember the last time I was ever kind of disappointed in a Patriots victory. I don't think it's ever happened. It was such a weird position to be in the other night, seeing them come out with the W in a hard fought game and feeling like they had screwed themselves because of the whole draft situation. So it was very interesting. Hopefully we can turn that corner soon, because I personally hate the idea of having to live in a world where we're rooting for the Patriots to lose. So
yeah, it's going to be weird going down this weekend to Foxborough, like, you know, against the Chiefs. It's going to be hard to root against them, to be honest with you, after right. The way they played last week, even, you know. And I mean, look, this is a tough game to begin with, but they're getting an angry Chiefs team, which we're going to talk about in around the league. But they're getting an angry Chiefs team. They're not going to catch the Chiefs off guard. In fact, I believe the Chiefs have now lost three games in a row. So they're in a must-win position. And the Chiefs are going to look at this Patriots game as a chance to get back on track.
Right.
So they're going to be focused. You know, third week of December, gearing up for the postseason, you're not catching them off guard.
No, you're not. And you know what? That's a perfect opportunity to see what this team has. Is like, hey, the season's over for the Patriots, but you got an opportunity to go play spoiler, you know, just rain on the defending Super Bowl champs parades while they're down, kick them while they're down, and, you know, go out there and get a statement win. And I think at the end of the day, you know, I actually do think, I'm not saying I think the Patriots are going to win, but I think you're going to see another hard fought game. I actually really do. I think it could be close.
I think they're going to play another good game. I think you'll see them go toe to toe with Kansas City.
Yep.
Okay, brother. Any other thoughts about the Patriots? We're going to wrap it up and we'll end the Patriots podcast, and then we'll start the Around the League podcast, which is, I think, going to be great.
Let's do it.
All right. Want to thank everyone listening to the Patriots podcast. Have a great week, everyone. And we will be back next Monday with another episode of the Dr. Football Patriots podcast. Talk about whatever happens against the Chiefs this weekend in Foxborough. Have a great week, everyone.